deeply deprived and neglected people in that society.
Absolutely.
The society
I totally agree with you, yeah.
Ignorance.
Yeah, even nowadays, you know, that
unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Therefore, we are just losing them. And yeah. Especially when it comes to religion, we don't consider them, you know, as a member of society or a family or a center. So we don't take mostly their advices because we as an adult, we always think that we are the one, you know, we are more practicing in religion compared to them. But it's not like that. Yeah. You know, their heart is more purer than us. And I say many times to parents that we are not that much beloved to Allah compared to them. Because if we do any mistake, yeah, as an adult, yeah, straight away, Allah will, you know, punish us because Allah has given us big opportunities of experiences because we live for 30, 40 years. But what about teens? If they do any mistake, Allah will give them some more opportunities and Allah will not take that much seriously compared to us. So, but we, that is the Allah's dealing. Allah's dealing is so beautiful. You know, Allah is so merciful towards them. But we are so harsh sometimes, you know, and our behavior tells that we are taking very, very strictly towards them when it comes to religion. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. And especially when it comes to the religion,
yeah,
because
in
their normal day-to-day life, maybe they take their kids to marriage ceremonies or different their ceremonies and they pay attention to their children. But when it comes to religion, religious activities, unfortunately, they neglect.
Exactly.
And what we can do, you said, by respecting, if we give a lot of respect, then they can have this the love of religion in their hearts. The other way I just want to mention with you and with our dear listeners that if we give them different ideals, we give them the role models of the religious personalities, then it can give them a big chance to study the Islamic rulings and to follow the, you know, Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam.
That is
and
beautiful,
Islam.
yeah. Role model, it makes very difficult task easy because so easy to follow someone who's acting in front of you. You know, you can watch, you can observe that person and you can see that person is so successful and you just love to follow the steps. You know, that's it. So that is amazing. That is something doable.
That's why so many people, you know, especially in the Western countries, whenever any alim visits them, they are very keen to visit that alim with their children, fortunately.
Yeah, that I see.
Because they know this alim is a good role model for them. You know, the respect this alim gets, the, you know, attention this alim gets. And if a child, a teenager sees this in front of his eyes, then this can have a very, very good
impact. I'll tell you one thing about myself. You know, my mother, she is still now, alhamdulillah, she's a big fan of scholars, yeah? Especially the turban. That is the beautiful gift of our Prophet, you know, his beautiful
the holy dress which ulama
wear. Exactly. I call it, it's like a crown. So my mother, she used to show me that look, Razia. I remember what she used to tell me, Razia, look, many people came and people are giving respect to them, but look at the alim, the
Sorry
scholar.
Sorry to disturb you, inshallah you will continue.
Okay.
Dear listeners, we will have a short break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. So please continue your...
Yeah. I'm just giving a small example, but which is just still there in my mind, that my mother used to show me that, look at that scholar. The moment he entered the gathering, everyone stood up, you know, and then she would say, wow, you know, This scholar, maybe, inshallah, he, if he's a practicing one, good one, sincere one, he is the truly representative of our Prophet and A'imma alayhimus salam. And that kind of small doses and examples and role models which she used to give me, yeah, makes me a bit, inshallah, nearer to Allah and religion. So I truly agree with this point that we have to give some very beautiful examples and role models to our teenagers. And you have given this beautiful example that, you know, we shouldn't look for the big heroes that you say, we don't have any hero, you know. No, even the resident alim and scholar, even during the month of Ramadan and during the month of Muharram, whenever you get any nice speaker who visits your city, your country, you know, you have to rush towards them. And that's enough. You shouldn't look for some very extraordinary role models. Yeah, that is not practicing.
We do not have, you know, very perfect and Ahl Bayt and Imam Masumin alayhim salam. But all the scholars, they do their best, they try their best to follow the footsteps of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, so they can be very good role models.
You know, we all love to follow.
And teenagers, they're more.
They're more. Yeah. That is a peak season of following. Yeah, that station, that period is something out of this world compared to other periods of our life. Yeah,
that's
no doubt.
That's why they want to copy and follow, you know, their role models, hairstyle.
Exactly.
Outlooking their appearance, their, you know, clothing.
Even language, accents, you know, all kind of new trend and fashions easily. And they follow very beautifully, you know, that is something. So we have to take this good quality for our religious purpose. You know, for spirituality, for instilling that love of Allah and Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam.
Indirectly.
Yeah,
because
that is a good
directly
point.
Directly, if we say, come and follow this role model, then it does not
indirectly. Good point.
These worldly role models also, they do not say, come and follow me. You know, they show the way, they show their attractiveness, their attraction to our teenagers.
Exactly.
Then our teenagers follow them. Dear listeners, thank you so much for joining us and listening to this beautiful discussion. If you have any kind of comments or suggestion, please write us at englishradio@irib.ir. And you can follow us on our social media at Call of Islam Radio. And if you have time, you can visit our website also, www.parstoday.com. Thank you very much for being with us. Until next episode, Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, it's time to listen to a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Dr. Shomali. He's going to talk about the analysis of Ziyara Ali Yasin.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, Ziyara is a very important concept by itself. Ziyara for us is not a matter of physically going to a place and visit a personality only. Ziyara is a visitation by heart in the first place. And this can happen from a close place or from distance. You may from distance be able to visit the Imam, for example, and you might be in the shrine and not visiting Imam. So it's a kind of encounter with the person who is visited, which starts with heart, is with ma'rifah and love. Ma'rifah is very important. Maybe at some point we can talk about why we say arifan bihaqqa in ziyara. And if possible, you try to be physically also as close as possible. If not, at least you try to turn towards the person that you are visiting, or face qibla, which is the general direction that you can visit any imam facing qibla. Even in some of the shrines where we recite the ziyara, it is recommended you face qibla, because qibla is the general direction. So this is by itself a very important concept, and inshallah maybe at some point we can reflect on the concept of ziyara. But now, what about imam of our time? He doesn't have any shrine, for example, where na'uzu billah, he is buried, for example. He's alive. So what does ziyara here mean? Again, the same thing. Means that with your heart and with your ma'rifah, you want to have an encounter with the imam. You want to say your salutations, your salams to Imam. You want to ask Imam to intercede for you, to pray on your behalf, to help. And all this for remembrance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, of course. Among different things, different recitations that we are recommended for 12th Imam, Ziyarat Ali Yasin is one of the most well-known, most respected one, most common one among our scholars. And inshallah, I can refer to some of the things about the chain of narration of this and sanad of this ziyarah. So Ziyarat Ali Yasin is not an exception. It's one case of ziyara of the 12th Imam as part of the line of ziyarat that we have, which is a very important way of us connecting to the chosen servants of Allah, the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, and also previous prophets and awliyaullah. Many times we also send our salams to Adam, to Musa, to Ibrahim, to Nuh alayhim as-salam, to Isa alayhi as-salam. So this is a very integral part of the life of mu'min, and in this world, this ziyara is what we initiate, but we hope in the time that we are need, we will receive their reciprocal ziyara, inshallah. First, I start with what a great muhaddith, a great scholar of hadith, Sheikh Abbas Qummi, has mentioned in Mafatih al-Jinan, because everyone has this at their availability, and they can read and check. And then, inshallah, I will mention other, you know, things about the sanad. Sheikh Abbas Qummi, rahmatullah alayh, in the section on the ziyarat for Imam Mahdi ajallallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, he says that one of the things that he mentions for the sardab, for the basement in Samarra, he says, Sheikh Jalil Ahmad ibn Abi Talib Tabarsi, in his noble book Al-Ihtijaj, so Sheikh Tabarsi in Al-Ihtijaj, has narrated that from Nahiyye Muqaddase, so from the sacred point of, you know, reference to Imam Mahdi Jalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif, a reply came, a reply letter came for Muhammad Himyari. And it started, of course, you know, with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. لا لأمره تعقلون ولا من أوليائه تقبلون. Neither you understand yourself Allah's affair, nor you accept from awliyaullah. Hikmatun balighatun fama tughni an-nuzur. This Imam referred to this verse of the Quran, that this is a kind of adequate or a kind of reaching wisdom of Allah. Fama tughni an-nuzur, but the warnings are not benefiting and sufficient. As-salamu alayna wa ala ibadillah as-salihin. Salam, peace be upon us and on righteous servants of Allah. Then Imam said, whenever you want to pay attention with us or through us to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is very important. Ahlul Bayt never direct us to themselves, never get us stuck with themselves. They always refer to God. They are signs for finding Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In Ziyarat Jama, we say, Man arada Allah bada'a bikum. If someone wants to reach Allah, it starts with you. You find first the sign, and then you get the direction and reach your destination. So Imam says that whenever you want to pay attention to God, to remember Allah through us, and also you want to remember us, then say this, Salamun ala Ali Yasin. So according to Sheikh Abbas Qummi, this is a respected, reliable ziyara that Sheikh Tabarsi in Al-Ihtijaj has reported, and it goes back to Himyari. In our books, we find another also chain of narration. So there are actually two ways for this ziyara. One is the most famous one, which is This Himyari, who is Muhammad ibn Abdullah al-Himyari al-Qummi, his kunya was Abu Ja'far. He used to live in time of Qaybat al-Sukhra, minor occultation. There are many mukatabat, many written exchange between him and Imam Mahdi al-Jalallahu ta'ala farajahu al-Sharif, and one of them involved this ziyarat Ali Yasin. But there is another one which is going back to the second Naib of Imam Mahdi al-Jalallahu ta'ala farajahu al-Sharif, Muhammad ibn Uthman Amri, and Ibn Mashhadi in Al-Mazar al-Kabir has mentioned that. Sayyid ibn Tawus in Misbah al-Za'ir has also mentioned that. And that has some differences with this one. So we have two ways of receiving this important ziyara. And as I said, our scholars have always paid great attention to this ziyara.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين
He who asks questions cannot avoid the answers. A simple question.
Is Britain being run by a clown? If the rumours are true, that is the view of French President Emmanuel Macron, who was also reported by a satirical French magazine as having said that Johnson had the attitude of a vulgarian. These comments came to light after Macron objected to Johnson's decision to publicly tweet a letter containing a five-point plan to tackle the issue of migrants who use small boats to cross the English Channel. And specifically after the fatal sinking of one boat, costing at least 27 lives.
In a public statement, Macron explained, "I spoke with Prime Minister Johnson in a serious way. I continue to do that, as I do with all countries and all leaders. I am surprised by methods when they are not serious. We do not communicate from one leader to another by tweets and letters that we make public." Macron is alleged to have added privately, "Bojo talks to me at full speed. Everything is going fine. We have discussions like big people." And then he gives us a hard time, before or afterwards, in an inelegant way. It's always the same circus. Prime Minister Johnson's actions and Macron's responses have revealed the impact recent developments have had on Anglo-French relations. Macron has claimed Brexit was the starting point of what he called the Johnson Circus, and claimed problems such as the petrol crisis that blighted Britain, plus other product shortages, arose from the UK's withdrawal from the EU. He added Johnson portrayed himself as the victim and France as the scapegoat, adding, "In private he says he's sorry to behave like this, but he says that he has to consider public opinion over everything else."
What are we to make of the trading of criticisms between President Macron and Prime Minister Johnson? And why can America no longer seem able to fix poor relations between European countries? Simple questions with important answers. And let's start with strong words from the former French ambassador, Sylvie Berman, who said Anglo-French relations haven't been this bad since the Battle of Waterloo. How does the public feel France and Britain are getting on? We put that to them here in central London. This is what they said.
I have no idea, I'm sorry.
Are you French? We're here in Westminster. Thank you for coming on.
It's five questions, and thanks for stopping.
Probably not the best person to ask.
Oh.
Sorry.
Thanks very much.
Cheers. Yeah. Question one. The former French ambassador says Anglo-French relations haven't been this bad since the Battle of Waterloo. How do you feel France and Britain are getting along?
Well, I think it would be better to answer your question in a way of why don't we be sensible and step back and use statements like approach. As an ordinary citizen, I'm distressed.
Not very well at all. I think they should stay this side of the channel.
I think there have been far worse periods in Anglo-French relations since the Battle of Waterloo. I mean, do you remember what happened in the World War II when we blew up half their navy in the Mediterranean? I think relations were a bit more sour then, but I'd say it could be far worse.
I would say that France and Britain aren't quite as bad as the Battle of Waterloo, but it certainly seems like the situation's deteriorating. It would be good to have a bit more civility on both sides.
I wouldn't really know. I think we're not as strong as we used to be, as like a friendship, say, but I wouldn't know.
Well, it is clearly a deteriorating situation. That's for political reasons. President Macron's facing difficult elections in April. He sees political capital in picking a fight with the UK over Brexit, fish, migrants. And I don't think we're going to get any improvement until after those elections in April.
Since Waterloo? I have no idea.
He's probably not far wrong, actually, or she, if it's a lady ambassador. I think relations aren't good, but I think it's chiefly between the two at the top.
I think we're getting along okay. I think it has been quite tense recently, but I don't think like COVID's not really helped that.
Yeah, while it's been a bit tense, it should get sorted in the next year and year and a half.
I'd say he's probably right. Not great. The submarine deal didn't help things.
Well, I think the relationship, there are tensions at the moment, and all I can really say is I hope that everybody really sort of able to come together to try and work through the relations. I think through the dialogue, I think we can get French-British relations back to a really good place.
As far as, you know, the public is concerned, I think we just have to wait and see how this fleshes out and, you know, give it more time before having any sort of substantial judgment towards it?
I don't know, you're asking the wrong person. That's not something I have an opinion on.
I know after Brexit it might be a little hard, but consider the situation, they are more helping. In this COVID as well situation, a bit supportive, I will say, yeah.
I think it's difficult to say at a political level, probably not too well, but I think generally the populations are very agreeable about most things.
President Macron has been reported as describing Boris Johnson as a clown. What does the public think of this sort of commentary and use of language?
Well, I think it's slanderous. Well, if we don't go and elect their presidents over there, they shouldn't be involved in our presidents over here or prime ministers over here.
I'd say Boris has used far worse in the past.
I can't necessarily disagree with the sentiment, but I don't think it was productive in any way.
Well, I wouldn't call him a clown. I'm a big supporter for him.
President Macron sees political capital with the votes he's trying to attract from the nationalist side of the French electorate by attacking Boris Johnson.
I think that is kind of offensive.
I still believe that the rock underneath is that the two nations are more united than they are separated.
It's subjective. It's his own ideal, but he can, why not? He's a bit of a clown. He's a funny guy.
I don't think it's a good example to set to others, especially the younger generation.
President Macron said that Boris Johnson was a clown. What do you think when people use language like that?
I've seen a lot of videos. They're quite funny, to be honest. But I think he's doing good with vaccine rollout and all of these things. So I think it's quite good. But it's bad, I think, to use clown. But the videos are quite funny.
Probably not clever, because it's, you have to play the game.
I think all I want from language and diplomatic relations is people really sort of talking to each other respectfully.
It's a poor choice if you're saying something about a fellow international leader, even if it's behind closed doors, if that's true.
In my opinion, it's not really called for, even if Boris Johnson is a clown, which, might be many people's opinion.
No, I like Boris Johnson. It's all everybody look after. I like Boris Johnson.
I think, on a certain level, I guess you have to use your words a little bit wiser. But I mean, I wouldn't massively disagree in that respect, to be honest.
Oh, definitely, it's not good. It's not good. They should not use such language against such great people. You are representing a country, and saying such language like a clown, it's certainly not look good for them as well.
I tend to agree with what Macron says.
Why can nobody, including America, seem to improve relations between England and France at the moment?
They haven't done for 1,000 years. Why do they expect it to be for the next 500? I don't think they will be improved.
I think the departure from the European Union says a lot. I think the French, they are particularly big players in the EU, and they weren't too happy when we left. I think Macron and Boris, they don't particularly see eye to eye ideologically, and there's a lot of obvious tensions that go with it.
Probably because Macron is worried about the rise of the far right in France and how that's developing a sort of French nationalism that he'll presumably want to try and emphasise his patriotism, get away from it a little bit. And over here, of course, there has been a lot of mood towards patriotism as well, towards this sort of British nationalism and look how great we are, and nothing says Britain is superior quite like having an argument with the French.
Because we haven't got to those elections in April that will allow the watershed to happen. Either Macron will be back in, in which case he'll probably be far more relaxed with regard to the UK, or he'll be out and we'll be dealing with somebody else.
I think there's too much mistrust. I think if people talk more, then relationships will improve. I mean, that's how relationships always improve, rather than people just saying what they want to say and closing off to anything that's set up by the opposition, or by the opposite side, I should say.
I think because politics is quite selfish at the moment, so everyone's there's been a turn towards like nationalism, which I don't think helps relations with any countries.
Because we have media that's built on tension, so civil discourse at the moment isn't being prioritised. It's more about making a slogan and getting a statement. So I think until we fix that, we're going to be in the same cycle.
I think it's the United States, it's concentrating on itself for now. So, and that's how it's going to be. The Biden administration has made it clear that our people first. So, yeah.
I think basically if people aren't getting along, then it shows that the people involved aren't very good at having open dialogue, aren't able to express themselves and communicate well. So if there's friction between our politicians and other countries, I think that it's a lack of communication skills.
France and Britain appear to have much in common. Both countries have similar populations, with France at 67 million and the UK numbering 67 million. Each has a similar gross domestic product, with the UK turning over in 2020 around $2.7 trillion and France $2.6 trillion. But these two countries have a surprisingly long record of fighting each other. Over the last 800 years, France and Britain have fought each other in at least 12 different wars. In total over this time, they have been at war for over 200 years, meaning they have fought each other for about one quarter of all the years since before the Middle Ages. In the past, the United States would mediate in the affairs of Europe. But this time, if anything, America has made matters worse. Why does Washington seem so powerless in this situation?
Well, I don't know if they seem so powerless. Maybe they're just fed up of all the silly squabbles that we have over in Europe.
You see the United States withdrawing from all kinds of diplomatic affairs these days. I think they are trying to take a backseat in European affairs in a lot of ways.
Probably because President Joe Biden is focused on his domestic agenda, and after having had some unsuccessful foreign policy elements, I don't think he's eager to throw himself into a complex and hostile situation.
They got the presidents, we got prime minister. However, they've got loads of states and they all run off states. So if, say, Joe Biden wants to make a decision, it has to go through all the states before that decision can be made. So I think it brings their power down.
Well, you've got the leader of the free world is Joe Biden. He is a weak president in many ways.
It's probably not a bad thing if they are powerless at the moment, because they come in where they shouldn't have done far too often.
I don't know if Biden is particularly strong. I think he's having to deal with a lot, and I think America's quite a broken country at the moment due to Donald Trump.
They've got their own domestic problems, which, you know, Biden's trying to sort out, and they've reorientated themselves to the east.
I guess everyone's pretty powerless at the moment because they've got, you know, COVID lurking, and there's huge domestic policies, you know, at stake. There's a massive shortage of money, so you have to go backwards before you can go forwards, unfortunately.
Well, I think they're dealing with COVID, and there's intense pressure on the United States to get it right.
America, every country's got their own concerns right now, their own things they need to fix. Last thing they need to worry about is fixing somebody else's problems.
I mean, I feel like they need to sort their own stuff out before getting involved. I think, yeah, they've got their own issues, to be honest. And I don't think they're seen as maybe the best mediator at the moment in the world for that kind of thing.
I think it's not that weak right now, but it was when the Trump was there. So there were so many diplomatic, and there's so many, gangs were forming, like, we are supporting of Trump, we are supporting of those. But I think there were more hatred at that time. Now, when Biden came, so I think it's been, things are changing a little bit.
I think they've got their eye very firmly on Northern Ireland, and there's big problems possibly going to happen there, I hope not. But
with all these divisions, where are relations between the UK, France, Europe, and for that matter, America, heading in the long term?
Britain was very good on its own before, it'll be good in the future. America will be, and France will be as well. As long as they don't interfere with our politics and our justice system, then we'll all be getting on okay.
I think the relationship is strong and will stay strong, and these are all very minor inconveniences.
I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. Obviously, things are on a downwards turn at the moment, but I think that there are enough people who are committed towards a solution, despite the rhetoric, that things will calm, things will get a little bit better.
I'm not saying nothing bad's going to happen, but I think we're more going to stay independent than we used to be with Europe. We'll be more independent.
I think there are short-term problems. Obviously, the EU is still very bitter over the Brexit vote, but we're not coming back.
Well, I think that the presidents are going to change. So soon on after, the relationships are going to change, and I hope that it will be better than now. Yeah.
In the medium term, I'm not that worried. I'm even less worried in the long term. But I believe that as political entities and personalities change, that will return to an even keel. On the other hand, that's with France and Europe in general. Be interesting to see what the new Chancellor makes of us in Germany.
Hopefully for the better, I think. I think that each country needs to engage with their own people, but also with each other.
Maybe tension at the moment, but I think in 5 to 10 years' time, we'll all be looking back at this as a minor footnote.
It's a long, long walk, my friend. It's going to be a long walk. So, who knows?
Hopefully to something understandable, agreeable, civil.
I think that we're living in a world where there's a lot of new challenges, and I think these new challenges are also leading to divisions between other countries.
I don't think we're falling apart at all. I think maybe just better leadership in certain situations would improve, I guess, the forecast of that kind of stuff?
It's headed towards a better shaping of the world. Okay, and these are five major countries, if you see.
Well, just hope everyone, I think, would hope it's just peaceful and people can just relearn how to reconnect and be a bit more agreeable, I think.
In my opinion, it's probably just going to get worse as global warming, especially global warming gets worse. I think that there'll be more call from the public for governments to be more self-serving rather than actually a more of a kind of global approach, which is probably what we need. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen.
Thank you so much. Have a very good afternoon.
Though President Macron said Johnson apologised privately for blaming France publicly about the channel crossings and the food-related so-called sausage war, he also said of the UK, "It is sad to see a major country with which we could do huge numbers of things being led by a clown." Former French ambassador to the UK, Sylvie Berman, has also stated that relations between France and the UK were the worst they had been since the Battle of Waterloo hundreds of years ago. Anglo-French relations are at a modern-day low, and no one appears able to de-escalate this ongoing exchange of insults. With America also unable to mediate, France and Britain are left to battle it out in a very public dispute where two premiers treat each other as a scapegoat and a clown. No shots will be fired, but it appears both sides are rerunning their own version of the Battle of Waterloo. Though, in public relations terms, at this stage, the outcome, namely who will win, is very much in doubt.
Thank you.
ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام قليل مدوم عليه خير من كثير مملول منه.
أمير المؤمنين إمام علي عليه السلام stated, A little that lasts is better than much that brings grief.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's wonderful to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. So, dear friends, in these recent episodes, we've been talking about how His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, the living miracle of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Imam Ali alayhi salam has shown us a certain kind of lifestyle. It's interesting, this is the same lifestyle of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And of course, this is the same lifestyle of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali. And likewise, we see that this lifestyle is the same, and it is continuous, and it is repetitive, it is the same, it is stable amongst all of the infallible imams. And so when we say that this is a lifestyle of Imam Ali alayhi salam, this means this is the lifestyle and the manners and the seerah and the sunnah and the akhlaq, the morals, the ways of all of the infallible imams, and they, of course, have taken this lifestyle, this Islamic lifestyle, if you will, from the Messenger of Allah. In one of these instances, Imam Ali alayhi salam says to us,
that one of the things which can help an individual is during hard times to hope for a solution. Again, during hard times, one should hope for a solution. Now, when Imam Ali alayhi salam here, he's saying that we should hope for a solution when in hard times. Of course, this does not mean that in these kind of hard times, we don't do anything. We just sit down and we just plainly hope and pray that everything gets fixed. No, rather, we should and we must work to get ourselves out of a hard situation. We must actively plan and strategize and work and, you know, help ourselves and try to get out of these hard times and difficult situations. So we must act. We must do something. But there is a very interesting psychological, spiritual aspect here. And that is that if you are hopeless, then no matter how much you act, it won't be as good as if you were hopeful for a solution in hard times, right? So, for example, when you don't have hope that a solution will present itself or that you will be able to overcome a hard situation or a hard time or a hard condition, because of that hopefulness, your action becomes weak. But on the other hand, when you are hopeful that there is a solution, you are hopeful that Allah will help you, you are hopeful that you can overcome a certain situation, then this gives you the spiritual strength and, for lack of a better word, the psychological strength to be able to overcome the hard times that you are faced with. So, another profound lesson, hoping for a solution in hard times, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafiya. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, from the very beginning, I took care to help you to develop a noble character and to fit you for the life which you have to lead, to let you grow up to be a young man with a noble character, an open and honest mind, and clear and precise knowledge of things around you. Originally, my desire was only to teach you the holy book thoroughly, to make you understand its intricacies, to impart to you the complete knowledge of his commandments and interdictions, and not to leave you at the mercy of the knowledge of other people. But after having succeeded in this task, I felt nervous that I may leave you untrained and uneducated in the subjects which themselves are subject to so much confusion and so many contradictions. These are the subjects whose confusions have been made worse, confounded by selfish desires, warped minds, wicked ways of life, and sinful modes of thinking. Therefore, I have noted down in these lines the basic principles of nobility, piety, truth, and justice. You may feel them to be overbearing and harsh, but my desire is to equip you with this knowledge instead of leaving you unarmed to face the world where there is every danger of loss and damnation. As you are a noble, virtuous, and pious young man, I am sure you will receive divine guidance and succor. I am sure he will help you achieve your aim in life. I want to promise to yourself to follow my advice carefully.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
There is another very interesting, conversation of this type. And let me start with Sahih Bukhari here. Sahih Bukhari, in the narration of the peace treaty that the Prophet signed with the Mushrikeen of Mecca, has a discussion there where just one sentence from there, where he says to Ali, "Anta minni." وَعَنَا مِنْكَ. Remember yesterday we talked about Surah Barat, that Jibreel came down and he said to Rasulullah that either you take the Surah Barat to the Mushrikeen of Mecca to announce it, أَوْ رَجُلٌ مِنْكَ, or somebody who is from you. This is another incident where the Prophet is saying, أَنْتَ مِنِّي, O Ali, you are from me. وَعَنَا مِنْكَ, and I am from you. The first one is easy to understand, just like the famous statements, you know, Hussein and Minni, wa ana min Hussein. The first one is very easy to understand. The second one is the where you have to think about it. Ahmad bin Hanbal also in his Musnad says the same statement from Rasulullah, where he says, Aliyun minni wa ana minhu. Ali is from me and I am from Ali. This relationship is so important that you cannot separate them. That is where when we say, you know, أَشْحَدُ أَنْ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهِ وَمُحَمَّدٌ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ وَعَلِيٌّ وَلِيُّ